Wake up, it's the Saturday Morning Podcast. Let mom and dad sleep in and come back with me to the 80s. Let's grab a bowl of Raisins, Rice, and Rye, or Breakfast with Barbie cereal, and flip on the tube. I've got the TV guide and hours of nothing to do. My name is Chris, and I love all the Saturday morning cartoons. When I was a kid, I lived for Saturday mornings. Now that I'm an adult, I want to relive all those great shows and see how they came about. Let's take a deep dive back to the 80s and see what's waiting. Rewind! When you're feeling blue, what's a person to do? A trip to Happy Town is waiting when you're down. Big Top's the clown in charge when gloominess is looming large. A pie in the face when you're feeling cranky is the perfect solution from Jokester Pranky. Come on down and hear this story, a Saturday morning show from producer Chuck Lorre. Your cheers, I hear them, but quiet down. It's time to talk about the little clowns of Happy Town. In the fall of 1987, ABC had three new shows that came to Saturday morning. It was a block of programming created to try and take down the competition on CBS and NBC. From 8 a.m. to 9:30, CBS's Muppet Babies were in a war for animated domination with NBC's The Smurfs. And who wouldn't want to see an actual war between The Smurfs and the Muppet Babies? The Smurfs premiered back in 1981 and were a hit from the beginning. Because of their popularity, the network asked for a whopping hour and a half of adventures every week. At the time the 1987 lineup started, they were entering into the seventh season. They were the only Saturday morning series to last for so long at that time. At the age of seven, Shirley Pao's mythical blue friends were winding down, right? And what about the Muppet Babies? They premiered in 1984 and were entering into their fourth season. But there hadn't been any Muppet movies since the show premiered. Jim Henson moved on to projects like Labyrinth, even though he was still supervising the animated Muppets. Two aging shows in the same time slot were battling it out to be number one. ABC had the right idea. If they put their new programming up against the aging giants, maybe one of them would fall. ABC adapted the plush toy, My Pet Monster, into a show which premiered at 8:30. The Little Clowns of Happy Town came right after. And the new block of programming was rounded out by Little Wizards. Over the course of time, all three of the shows would fade into fairly deep obscurity. My Pet Monster may be best remembered as the toys are a reminder that this show existed. But the middle child of the three, the Little Clowns of Happy Town, that is the subject of this show. As the title indicates, the show takes place in Happy Town. It's a place like any other city, except there is a circus there year-round and junior clowns who never get out of makeup. Yes, there is a hardcore sect of clowns whose only mission is to bring joy and happiness to the citizens. On the outskirts of town, there's a rundown mansion where the Keeper of Despair lives. Among the kids, the leader seems to be Big Top. He loves a good joke, but manages to tell many bad ones. He's the ringleader of the kids and has a positive attitude when charging into negative situations. He dresses in red and wears a blue necktie. Pranky is Little Clown's answer to Jokey Smurf. He has a limitless supply of pies and is constantly trying to prank his friends. He's been known for dropping banana peels to trip the others. Because physical humor can still elicit a laugh, he pulls his pranks in a good-natured way. There have also been times when he's become the victim of his own jokes. Pranky stands out from the others by wearing large red and blue pants held up with some old-fashioned suspenders. Hiccup is cute as a button, dressed in yellow and pink and sporting a tutu. She's got something of a raspy voice and is distinguished by the fact she hiccups all the way through her speech. She loves to sing songs and has an older brother. In fact, Blooper is Hiccup's older brother. He's very clumsy, which makes him perfect for physical comedy. His knack for falling down gets him into the other's acts by accident. He usually stumbles onto the scene, but is a crowd pleaser. Blooper wears a frilly blue collar and polka dot overalls. Tickles is hard to miss as she's got pink hair. She loves to laugh and is handy to have around. She's the MacGyver of the group, capable of fixing just about anything. Badumbump is Big Top's little brother and doesn't have the ability to speak. He makes sounds and gestures to get his point across. The others often refer to him as Bumper, a nickname. He's got Rover to pal around with, a pet elephant. Rover's part of the Clownimals, a collection of typical circus animals who help out when needed. Bumper seems to be the only one who can understand what the animals are saying. The junior clowns attend school to get their clownucation. Their teacher is Mr. Pickle Herring, the oldest clown in Happy Town. The teacher is mostly bald with gray hair and a mustache. He tends to be patient with the kids and tries to pass on all his clowning experience. He's the moral compass of the group, reminding them of what's right. The little clowns of Happy Town are on a mission to spread joy through the city. They find themselves up against Awful B-Bad and his goons, Geek and Whiner. He's the gentleman who lives in that rundown mansion on the outskirts of town. On a regular basis, B-Bad seems to drive through Happy Town, spreading his unhappiness. His drive to kill happiness comes from his desire for everyone to be just as gloomy as he is. Let's talk about the creators of the show. The series was based on an idea by Anthony Paul Productions. It appears that Little Clowns was the first concept from Anthony Paul to go into network production. The company would release the videos, The Bible, The Amazing Book, in 1988, and the 1989 video, The Amazing Children. The direct-to-video releases were Christian-related videos, teaching children morals and spreading positivity. The two videos appear to be an extension of the message Little Clowns was trying to get out on network TV. From what I can find, the show originated with the production company, Marvel Entertainment. In the Saturday morning race of the mid-80s, Marvel was in third place when it came to the ratings. To get out of this slump, Marvel hired a consulting company to help craft a show kids would find irresistible. The consultants, Q5 Corporation, was made up of professionals who had psychology PhDs or had backgrounds in advertising, marketing, and research. The consultants were made up of Suzanne Stutman, whose credentials boasted a Master of Social Work and was a licensed clinical social worker. In addition to her pedigree, Stutman was a part of the Institute for Mental Health Initiatives. Arnold Hutschnecker held a medical doctorate, and Norman Cousins was the adjunct professor in the UCLA School of Medicine. Cousins was an author credited with the book Anatomy of an Illness, which was turned into a TV movie in 1984. He was also interviewed in 1980 for the Leonard Nimoy-hosted series In Search Of. Cousins suffered from a debilitating disease and had rehabilitated through thinking good thoughts and staying positive. A former story editor of Little Clowns gave an interview to the Los Angeles Times in September 1987 regarding Q5. This would have come out around the same time that The Little Clowns actually premiered on network television. This editor said, "They aren't merely researching trends, they're trying to engage in social engineering. There's absolutely no passion with these people. There is no sense of honor, of anger, of deep emotion, of love. They're blandizers. They try to hammer out all the high and low points of being a human being. I can see we're not doing Dostoevsky on Saturday morning, but there has to be some leeway to create characters who are free to express themselves. On top of these consultants, producer Fred Wolf and his company, Murakami Wolf Swenson, was brought in to produce the show. The production company had successfully produced the shows Free to Be, You and Me, and the Puff the Magic Dragon specials. In 1987, they were just about to launch the animated series Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Fred Wolf may have brought in the young man who developed the concept and characters into the show it became. And that would have been 35-year-old Chuck Lorre, who started his career as a writer on The Littles and Pole Position. In 1987, dabbling in music, Lorre co-composed the music and theme song for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with DC Brown. Dabbling may not be the right word for it. Lorre was a musician who had traveled across the U.S. as a guitarist and songwriter. He wrote the song French Kissin' in the USA, which Deborah Harry recorded for her 1986 album, Rockbird. Lorre wrote the pilot script for The Little Clowns of Happy Town, and I would suspect he also wrote the series Bible. With the behind-the-scenes producers selected and scripts coming together, all they had to do was assemble the perfect cast. Daniel Ray Allen Cooksey Jr. was born in Moore, Oklahoma in November 1975. When he started acting at the age of 5, he went by the name Danny Cooksey. His mother, Melody Ann, moved her and her son to Los Angeles, where she pursued her dream of becoming a country singer. While Melody was out on auditions, Danny was spotted by talent agents and urged to audition for the role of Sam on Different Strokes. He won the role in 1984 and stayed with the show for the last 3 seasons of its run. Cooksey credited series co-star Gary Coleman with being a mentor and taking the young actor under his wing. From 1984 to 1987, Cooksey was on the rise as an actor in TV shows such as Riptide and MacGyver. He lent his vocals to cartoons like My Little Pony and Foofer. By the time he won the role as Big Top in Little Clowns, Cooksey was an acting veteran at the age of 12. Charles Michael Adler was born in 1956 in Peterson, New Jersey. In the mid-60s, his family moved to New York and then to Massachusetts. He earned the nickname Beanie because he was forever wearing a beanie cap. He grew up with a sister, Cheryl, who would go on to write the book Sober University. As a teen, he was a self-professed TV junkie, spending his time with favorites like Rocky and Bullwinkle and the Beverly Hillbillies. In 1971, Adler landed his first role in a commercial and then took a break from acting. Adler's first voice performance was as Spike in My Little Pony: Rescue at Midnight Castle in 1984. In 1985, he attended a private audition for voice directors Jenny McSwain and Arlene Thornton. Having no demo tape, McSwain and Thornton helped him to produce one. Adler made up voices and characters on the spot. It impressed the voice directors, but he felt embarrassed by his performance. He was so embarrassed he would only perform the characters with his back to the women and hidden in a hat and sunglasses. At one point, he was touted as the next Frank Welker for his diversity. Like Welker, Adler's roles started to come fast and furious. He found himself on the Transformers as Silverbolt and Trigger Happy. He was a regular on My Little Pony and G.I. Joe. When he won the role of Frankie on Little Clowns, he was involved with 11 other projects. Susan Blue was born in St. Paul, Minnesota in 1948. Born Susan Maria Blupka, she started her acting career in live action on a 1974 episode of Kojak. Her first voice role came in 1978 on the Ruby Spears show, Fang Face. She worked with Hanna-Barbera on the series Scooby-Doo and Scrappy-Doo. Speaking of Scrappy-Doo, she also voiced Flim Flam in the 1985 series The 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo. From the 70s onward, Blue has been consistently busy as a voice artist. In 1982, she married Cynthia Song. By 1987, like some of the other cast, Blue was pulling double duty on other shows. Blue was part of the cast for My Little Pony and the Flintstone Kids when she was cast as Hiccup on Little Clowns. Josh Rodin was born in 1974 in Los Angeles. He started his acting career in 1983 with the Puppies' Further Adventures playing Glider. He performed exclusively as a voice actor, appearing in such shows as Foofer and Challenge of the GoBots. By the time he landed the role of Blooper on Little Clowns, he also voiced Popeye Jr. on Popeye and Son. Ellen Gerstel was born in 1954 and started her voiceover career in 1983. Her first role was for the ABC series The Monchichis as Tutu in two episodes. In 1982, she married Gordon Bresic, a writer in the field of animation. By the time Gerstel nabbed the part of Tickles, she had been a part of Mighty Mouse, The New Adventures, and My Little Pony. Howard Morris was born in the Bronx, New York, in 1919. He attended New York University on an arts scholarship. During World War II, he served in the Army and helped to entertain the troops. Carl Reiner and Werner Klemperer were soldiers in his unit. In the 1950s, Morris came to fame when he joined Reiner on the Sid Caesar program, Your Show of Shows. In the 1960s, Morris played Ernest T. Bass on The Andy Griffith Show. He also turned to directing and helmed episodes of Andy Griffith, The Dick Van Dyke Show, and the black and white pilot of Get Smart. Around the same time, Morris entered into voice work with Hanna-Barbera. His first role for HB was as Jet Screamer on The Jetsons. Yes, he sang the catchy song Eep Orp Ock Ah-Ah on that show. By the 1980s, he had taken over such roles as Mayor McCheese and the Hamburglar for McDonald's ads. Morris wasn't just the characters, he also directed those commercials as well. He took to voice directing and was successful on a variety of shows. He was even the voice director for The Little Clowns of Happy Town, as well as the voice of Mr. Pickle Herring, the teacher. By the time he landed in Happy Town, Morris was in his late 60s. Let's talk about Pat Fraley. Born in 1949 in Seattle, Washington, he started in voiceover work by providing additional voices. He worked on Scooby-Doo Goes Hollywood for Hanna-Barbera in 1979. That was the same year he married Renee Zimmerman, his wife to this day. Through the early 80s, Fraley seemed to exclusively provide additional voices on the projects he was on. In 1984, that changed when he played both Eddie and Dr. Chase on Turbo Teen. He was also on The Littles as Slick the Turtle. In 1985, he joined the cast of G.I. Joe as Ace. By the time he joined the cast of Little Clowns as Awful B-Bad, he was also doing double duty on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. On TMNT, he would voice Krang as well as 64 others over the course of 152 episodes. Honorable mention to Frank Welker, who provided the sounds of Mute Clown Bada Bump. You all know who he is, and if you don't, go check out our episode about the Muppet Babies, or the Superpowers Team, or Snorks. Do you get it? He gets around, and we've covered him plenty of times. After these messages, we'll be right back with the premiere of The Little Clowns of Happy Town.
Kid, what do you call a black knight on a charging horse?
What, Sue?
A nightmare! Help, kid!
Time for a powerful Cheerios breakfast. A balanced breakfast like this one.
You got go with Cheerios and Cheerios that help you grow. You got go, go, power and power goes. Coming on strong with Cheerios.
A Cheerios breakfast.
I'd like to thank the guy who changed the straw and made my high C better than before.
Yeah.
Who put the straw in the high C fruit drink? A new cold straw that'll rip wrinkles and thin. A new long straw in my high seafood drink with vitamin C for me and my friend. Who was that man? Does body.
Pass it on.
Check it out.
It's so cool for hanging out.
It helps you grow up big and tall.
It's good for teeth.
That's not all.
It does.
Hey, Mr. Moo, what do you say?
Fresh Moo juice makes my day.
Milk. It does the body good.
Pass it on.
Milk, it does.
Milk, it does a body.
Milk, it does a body good.
Pass it on.
Pass it on.
If you watched the premiere of The Little Clowns of Happy Town, the date was September 12, 1987. The number two song on the American charts was I Just Can't Stop Loving You by Michael Jackson and Syeda Garrett. Households in prime time were tuned into Family Ties, the number one show on television. Mark Harmon was on the cover of People magazine with the caption, A Family at War. The bitter custody fight between Mark Harmon and his sister, Chris Nelson, leaves a clan in ruins and Ricky Nelson's son in the wreckage. If you were a kid in 1987, maybe you got up early and got yourself breakfast. Maybe you had a new cereal like a bowl of Fruity Marshmallow Krispies or Nutrific. Oh, there's a fancy top hat on the screen. You know that from fancy things come clowns? Yep, there's the confetti and a bunch of little clowns in an impromptu parade. When the title comes up, I can't help but like it. There's blue and pink in the background, just like the main colors in my logo. Okay, I'll admit this because we're super close friends. Yes, the only reason for my show is to cover the little clowns of Happy Town. Every episode will now be about this show, and I assume all my listeners will desert me. But when that happens, I think a parade of small clowns will come to cheer me up. I mean, if I drink enough tequila, I know they will. Tequila may be the quickest way to Happy Town. Rest assured, I will likely never do another episode about this show. Or will I? The rest of the opening is explaining who all these characters are and watching Awful B-Bad get zapped in the behind. What should that be called? Obviously, the front is Happy Town, so the West End? With a wink from the sun, we start the episode Baby Blues. From the looks of the makeup on these clowns, it is possible that a baby clown will actually be blue. Big Top juggles in his backyard practicing for the clowny games. Mute little brother, Badump Bump, slides a huge basket of eggs over to Big Top. And then, and I swear this is true, Big Top says, Clowny practice makes clowny perfect. Within 10 seconds, I know we have another Smurf situation on our hands. Cartoons don't need people replacing words with the title of the show or creating new words. That's some lazy Saturday morning right there. Badump Bump, or Bumper as he's known, tosses eggs at Big Top and he juggles them. And then Rover the elephant casually sucks them up his snout and pitches them like baseballs. Big Top takes it in stride, but it still looks like he's got 7 eggs. Elsewhere in the city, a little kid also tries to juggle. And this kid, Arnie, is the prototype Harry Potter with the chubby cheeks and round glasses. The fact that he's got egg on his face from improper juggling means he's a Hogwarts reject. Or at least good enough for Hufflepuff. It turns out that Arnie is practicing for the clowny games. It also turns out that Arnie is jealous of the attention his little brother, Ralphie, is getting. That feeling's never going away. Arnie will just have to live with it and learn to fight with Ralphie like real family. From Ralphie's sandbox, a mechanical eyeball pops up. It's like that scene in Star Wars where that mechanical eyeball popped out of the garbage. But this eye is a periscope connected to Awful B-Bad's house. Although, it could be a submarine. There's gauges and dials and a fireplace? Just like on a submarine, I guess. B-Bad's red-headed goon, Geek, gets hit in the face with oatmeal that Ralphie chucks in the periscope. And so does B-Bad. Is the evil layer of gloom under the sandbox? I don't understand the geography of Happy Town, so I declare this show too complicated to watch. But the little kid gives B-Bad an idea. He gives B-Bad a wonderful, awful idea. They'll use Arnie to spread gloom at the Clowny Games. Speaking of the games, they're starting right now. Everything is pink and purple, and there are spectator stands and buildings that would be right at home in Candyland. Mr. Pickle Herring, channeling his best Ed Wynn, is your host for the Clowny Games. Since this is the first episode, his real job is to tell you who everyone is. And a very merry unbirthday to you, and you and you. Bloopers up at the Clowny Games. All he has to do is flip, but things go horribly awry. Mid-flip, he launches up to a small bike on a high wire, rides it between two platforms, spins around a bar, and then lands in a pool below. All he had to do was a backflip, and he completely screwed that up. In the stands, Arnie is gloomy because his parents haven't shown up to watch him. But Big Top assures him they'll be there once the babysitter arrives. Although, if Mom and Dad need a little bit of time without the kids, that seems like the perfect opportunity to also try to go to Happy Town. If you know what I mean. And you do, because this is an obvious reference. Will I use it again? Probably. Is it lazy writing? Absolutely. In the middle of the street, Geek pops out of a sewer to announce that the babysitter is driving their way. Going into the sewer, I am desperate for four small glowing turtles to walk by. That would be some great Chuck Lorre synergy. No, not synergy. Turtle power! B-Bad unleashes his gloominess and the babysitter's car breaks down. Her car stops, the radiator blows, and her tires go flat. I guess B-Bad's using some sort of EMP that makes everything go haywire. Do we know the science behind his gloomy powers? With the babysitter waylaid, Arnie's parents are going to have to break their promise and miss Arnie in the Clowny Games. Although they could just take the baby to the games and cheer Arnie on. This would have to be better than missing it altogether. Speaking of the Clowny Games, Pranky grabs a pie and manages to put some polish on it so it swerves around several targets, but hits the one farthest away. Back in 1987, Pranky could have played for the Dodgers. Not today, though. He's too good for the Dodgers. It's time for the final event, championship egg juggling, because of course it is. Arnie angrily hangs up the phone in, get this, a phone booth. His parents can't come, and he's all kinds of disappointed. You know, when my parents couldn't come, they never told me. Big Top tries to calm him down, but Arnie takes a turn and wishes that his brother had never been born. This is where it should swerve into It's a Wonderful Life territory to see what life without baby Ralphie would be like. So long, Clowny Games. Hello, super dark alternate reality. Nope, wait. Big Top is letting his little brother ride him like a horse. And this leads us into a song about what a pain it is to have a little sibling. But at the end of the day, the older kids love their younger family. Is this a song that the clowns are performing now? Or is this just in Arnie's imagination? Where did this musical number come from? Back at the Clowny Games, Whiner, the other B-Bad henchman, backs up a garbage truck and releases the trash right onto Arnie. Man, when you're down, everyone kicks you. Arnie is still super pissed and B-Bad is delighted at the gloominess. Is it just me or do the clowns have vacant stares? Their eyes are wide open, but almost perpetually so. It's spooky, like if they blink, they might not exist anymore. Blink, damn it, blink! The dark clouds that settle over Big Top and the others signal a gloom alert. Mr. Pickle Herring rides in on a pogo stick and halts the Clowny Games. The gloom alert is pretty severe. The forecast calls for childish anger with a chance of going postal. The kids realize that Arnie is likely the cause and they try to find him. Pranky goes to a movie theater to look for Arnie. Blooper and Tickle shout into a pipe big enough to hide a body in, but it's Bumper that finds Arnie under a tree in the woods with his arms crossed. I'd seriously question this if little Arnie had any length of rope with him. Bumper puts himself in a tree and pretends he can't get down. Arnie has to rescue him, and they ride the elephant back to the Clowny Games. By the time they get there, the kids are laughing. I don't know what these douchemongers find so funny, but I'm glad someone's laughing. From behind a fence, B-Bad sees that his gloom has worn off. He's got to come up with a plan to re-gloomize Arnie. I'm also curious to know why this one kid is so important to B-Bad. Did his family do something to B-Bad? Why spend all this time on Arnie? If the baddie wants this kid to feel bad, he could just tell him he smells, or that he's not that smart, or that his baby brother is way better. That is how you spread gloom. Whiner and Geek bring in a pump-to-pump gloom into the circus where Bumper and Arnie are washing an elephant. They set the machine to high, and it explodes. All the clowns are dead. The end. No, wait. The explosion knocks B-Bad and his goons through the air. They land in a tree, and now B-Bad can talk without moving his mouth. Go check. Someone forgot to animate his lips. Oh, wait, you probably can't check since, you know, nobody has this show anymore. Arnie says that Bumper was teaching him all kinds of circus tricks. Arnie can now see the value of a little brother, and he hopes that his little bro will grow up to be just as cool. Big Top declares, "Now we're clowning." Oh, clown you, Big Top. At the Clowny Games, Arnie's parents have made it and brought the baby. And they cheer Arnie on. But what if he takes the stage, chokes, pees his pants, and runs away crying? Best Saturday morning moment ever. Instead, Arnie and Big Top set a record for egg juggling. Arnie says he's going to teach his brother to juggle eggs and hopes he'll grow up fast. The end of the first story.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey, Tickles, why did the boy throw his clock out the window?
It's me, Hiccup.
To see time fly.
Captain O.G. Readmore here. An ordinary sidewalk on an ordinary day. But did you ever stop to think that you could get away? Take a journey on a rocket. Take a voyage on a ship. Just read a book and off you go, because reading is a trip. Explore a tropic jungle. Ooh. Discover distant planets. Or reach the glacier's tip. Just read a book and off you go, because reading, yes, is a trip.
A convertible with teenagers and a dog that looks suspiciously like a poor man Scooby-Doo drives into the woods. And what a woods it is. The trees in the background look like giant broccoli. And there are huge mushrooms growing in the foreground. Mushrooms were everywhere back in the 80s. On the Smurfs? In Super Mario Brothers? Probably in the writer's room when this show was developed. Turns out this is a movie that Big Top, Hiccup, and Pranky are watching on TV. They're so scared, they're shaking. Big Top wants popcorn, which Blooper is trying to make with an exercise bike he MacGyvered to make popcorn. But I bet it'll taste like feet. Hiccup is so scared she doesn't want popcorn. Tickles is swinging on the ceiling and says it keeps the fear away. But not if you have a fear of heights. Bumper and Rover are at the bottom of a grand staircase shaking from the few seconds they saw of the movie. Okay, what is this house? The supports of the staircase look like barber poles with hearts on the top. There's a trapeze mounted to the ceiling. These kid clowns are left alone. Are these clowns real or just strange beings in someone's mind? Or maybe Bumper is imagining all these clowns as a coping mechanism for having cancer. Oh man, that took a turn. I hope that's not the case. It turns out that the all-seeing eye of B-Bad is back at the window. The group that's breaking bad are gathered in a green van with a double muffler and tank treads. Inside, Geek and Whiner are asleep. B-Bad plans to use his scare-o-matic machine to make the movie scarier. You know what's scarier than that movie? Watching an episode of this show. Inside Clown Mansion, the scary movie is over, but Hiccup has her head buried under a pillow. If this ends with it all being a dream Hiccup had, and then Freddy Krueger popping out of nowhere, I'll be on board. The little clowns unroll their sleeping bags for the clowniest sleepover ever. The clowniest sleepover I've ever had involved magnets and a Prince Albert piercing. But that's a story for a different podcast. Pranky unrolls his sleeping bag and takes out a pie. I hope that didn't cream his sheets. Tickles through the sleeping bags to the others from a trapeze that got unrolled, and this pie is still intact. Tickles should make deliveries for Amazon. There's a noise outside that sets them all on edge. They jump under the table, the popcorn goes all over the place. B-Bad is delighted that the clowns are going to hell in a handbasket. The villain has three monsters based on Shadow, Thunder, and Broccoli to scare the kids. And for some reason, he's gonna wait until morning to send in the monsters. Because monsters are always scarier in broad daylight. Right? Having survived the slumber party, the little clowns are now awake. Tickles sees B-Bad's roving eye and freaks out about things in shadows. I'm appalled that B-Bad watched the kids sleeping all night and no one at the network thought this was weird. Just the town villain who hangs out with dumb teenagers and is a peeping Tom spying on our clown kids. No big whoop. Also, that should have been the TV Guide blurb for this show. Whiner and Geek wake up to see the monsters and they are scared out of their wits. The little clowns are out on a Saturday and realize they told Mr. Pickle Herring they'd make pies for school. Jumping around like spastic little clowns, Pranky ends up in a tree. But it's not a tree, it's a Brocco tree. At the sight of Broccoli Monster, the clowns scatter. Hiccup is now plagued by the Shadow Monster and breathes so hard her chest might cave in. Bumper and Rover get screamed at by the Thunder Monster. Confronted by the trio of monsters, the clowns run under a bridge. If they were trolls, this would be their new job. Blooper has an idea. If they make the monsters laugh, maybe they'll go away. Blooper almost created the ending of Monsters, Inc. Big Top agrees that they should clown the monsters and off they go. Big Top, Blooper, and Tickles confront the monsters and perform their clown shtick. Geek and Whiner tell the monsters to come back because they're in charge. The monsters trip the teens as an FU. The little clowns, having failed, rush off to school. When the doors start to huff and puff, the clowns set a trap to trap a monster. But it's not a monster, it's Mr. Pickle Herring. Although he runs the school that encourages clowning and never getting out of makeup. So maybe he is a monster. Mr. Pickle Herring wants to know what's going on and hiccups her way through the story. The teacher says that the little clowns were on the right track trying to make the monsters laugh. He recites a poem about how monsters aren't real, and we see a montage of the little clowns terrorizing the monsters. I now want to see a whole movie of this where monsters are afraid to sleep because of the clowns they have nightmares about. The recitation gives Blooper an idea. Meanwhile, back at the B-Bad Mobile, the baddie is glad to see the clowns frightened. A scared Whiner and Geek get back into the van and knock B-Bad to the floor. The henchmen are told to get back to work. In a theater, Hiccup is singing while Tickles is running a spotlight. The Shadow Monster jumps out of nowhere and onto the stage. Maybe he'll do a little soft shoe, maybe he'll do a little tap dance. I don't know. Hiccup makes shadow puppets in front of the spotlight and it frightens the monster away. Meanwhile, Blooper and Pranky take a big pie outside. I mean like a huge pie. Orca big. When the Broccoli Monster shows up, the clowns jump into the pie. They blow pepper in the broccoli's face, it sneezes and loses all his veggie meat. The naked broccoli gives up and falls to the ground. Meanwhile, at the Float Factory, one of the many malt shops that Saturday morning cartoons like to frequent, Big Top and Bumper are setting a trap. When the Thunder Monster shows up, Bumper marches up to it and literally blows it away. The monster lands in paint and then flees looking like a rainbow. Awful B-Bad is 0-3, just like the Cleveland Browns. At the school, the clowns recap how awesome they were fighting the monsters. Blooper is declared the MVP and even gets a kiss from Hiccup. Wait, those two are brother and sister. It's Empire Strikes Back all over again. Also, ew! They realize that Blooper's idea was the clowny thing to do. And the next time they're scared, they can stand up to their fears. From the window, Bumper and Rover sneak up, and the elephant lets out a loud sound. Mr. Pickle Herring jumps under his desk instead of confronting the noise. Way to not take your own advice. Although, I can't fault Mr. Pickle Herring too much. That clown served in World War II. They all share a nervous laugh. The end. Yes! After these messages, we'll look at the impact, aftermath, and explore the legacy of the Little Clowns of Happy Town.
Those lonely pound puppies really need to be rescued.
Pound puppy, I'm so glad to find you. Put that lonely puppy pound behind you.
You need a name. I'll call you Freckle.
Lots of pound puppies need your love.
Oscar, meet Petey.
And when they're this lonely and this lovable, one more is always welcome.
Come share in all our cuddling, caring puppy love.
Pound puppies, each sold separately. From Tonka.
Twizzlers make me very happy. I love the way they taste so chewy. Twizzlers make me very happy.
We love the way they taste so fruity. So fruity, so chewy. So happy and oh so juicy.
Twizzlers make me very happy.
Twizzlers make your mouth so very happy.
Oh, so happy.
Was it a phenomenon? No. No. God, no. Clowns should never be a phenomenon. All joking aside, they were not a hit. The show ran 18 episodes and ended its run on July 16th, 1988. There wasn't really merchandise produced for the show. The show has become scarce and hard to track down. 6 of the 18 episodes are on VHS or DVD. The rest of them, the other 2/3, have been lost. What hurt the show the most was the approach to creation. Bringing in an idea, building on it with psychologists, and having Chuck Lorre bring it all together into a format was too many cooks in the kitchen. It was a collection of ideas without drive or heart. It was manufactured and mechanical upon delivery. Who thought clowns would be a good idea? Even clowns in the proper context, that of a circus and a good time, are not really smile-inducing. Look at how menacing they were in Dumbo. Clowns have been used to scare the wits out of people for a very long time. I'm looking at you, Pennywise. Even Michael McKean played a clown in Star Trek Voyager, and he was there to be menacing. Why cast a comedian as a clown if he's not going to be funny? If you look up quotes about clowns, you won't find anything positive. People hate clowns and they're vocal about it. Even famed mime and clown Marcel Marceau was credited with saying something akin to, "The scariest thing I can think of is, it's the middle of the night, there's a knock on the door, you open it, and there's a clown there. That sends shivers up my spine." So clowns on Saturday morning, trying to bring a smile to the face of the viewers, was likely out of reach. I don't know the age that ABC was trying to reach with Little Clowns of Happy Town. I would assume it might delight a child of a certain age, say around 5 or 6. But any kid beyond that may choose to watch Muppet Babies or check out the Smurfs. Or just wait for what came next. At the time Little Clowns aired, it was criticized for rerunning old jokes and gags. One critic even said Little Clowns was the show that made sleeping in seem like a better alternative. From what little of it I have seen, there was no real personality to the characters or the show. I like the idea that the Little Clowns were trying to cheer people up, but the reason for doing so was false. Awful be bad spread bad feelings, and the Little Clowns had to reverse it. What if a kid was sad as a natural extension of life? What if the Little Clowns had encountered a kid whose parents had just died? You can't throw a pie in the face and suggest that that will make it better. the happiness the clowns could have given would have been fleeting and artificial, just like the gloominess in the show. I will give Little Clowns of Happy Town 1 point. It was a show almost doomed from the beginning, but at least ABC gave it a try. Even if it came off as old-fashioned and out of touch, it was something different. Yes, it might have been like the Smurfs with a collection of different personalities, but the concept of Little Clowns, I believe, could only have come from the 1980s. That was the rise of the psychologist. People openly admitted to seeing an analyst. It was the time when we were trying to understand ourselves better from the inside out. It was such an 80s concept. There was Deanna Troi on Star Trek The Next Generation and Frasier Crane on Cheers. These were exciting characters who could reflect on life and maybe look into our souls to see who we really were. Psychologists were almost a mythical character, despite the fact that they were just trained to read human beings. But when it came to knowing what kids would want in a Saturday morning cartoon, they missed the mark. After Little Clowns of Happy Town went off the air, Danny Cooksey continued on in voiceover work. He worked on shows like The Further Adventures of Super Ted and The Adventures of Raggedy Ann and Andy. In live action, he made appearances on Mr. Belvedere and Growing Pains. On the big screen, he appeared in the cult classic Mac and Me, as well as playing John Connor's friend Tim in Terminator 2 Judgment Day. Cooksey hooked up with Nickelodeon in the 1990s with the series Salute Your Shorts. He was Montana Max in Tiny Toon Adventures. Through the years, Cooksey has continued to find work, mostly in the animation field. Like his mother, Cooksey became a singer in 1992 for the heavy metal band Bad for Good. The group released one album. In 1998, he married Amber Lee and the two have two children, Zoe Lee and Jackson Paul Cooksey. Recently, he voiced the character of Snag in the pilot for the animated show Long Gone Gulch. Charlie Adler continues to be one of the most prolific voice artists today. He was Buster Bunny on Tiny Toon Adventures and Starscream in the Transformers movies. He's got almost 300 credits to his name and shows no end of stopping in his mid-60s. Since the 90s, Adler's had a steady career as a voice director for almost 70 animated projects. In the late 90s, Adler got married and his father to one child. Sue Blue and her partner Cynthia were together until Cynthia's death in 2010. While Blue has continued acting, she's also become a voice director and casting director. She started directing on the 1989 California Raisins show and has run the gamut of entertainment since. She's voice directed on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the Land Before Time series, among many others. Her credits are impressive, and she continues to act, direct, and cast on the projects she's involved with. In 2013, Blue married girlfriend Tanya Thiemann, the sister of Paris Thiemann. Paris may not be a household name, but you may remember him from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. He was infamous for playing Mike TV. Josh Rodin continued on in voice work until 1989, and ended his acting career with an episode of Hagar the Horrible. By all accounts, he went into the legal field and became an attorney who represents management in all aspects of labor and employment litigation. Ellen Gerstel would go on to play the character of Rapture in the original Gem series. She and her husband, Gordon, would divorce in 2006. From 1999 until 2016, Gerstel disappeared from the world of voiceovers. In 2016 and 17, she recorded a few parts and has gone silent again. Wherever she is, we wish her happiness and good health. Over the course of Howard Morris's life, the actor was married a total of 5 times. He had 3 daughters and a son. In the late 80s, he went on to Garfield and Friends, voicing Wade Duck in the U.S. Acres segments. At the end of the 20th century, Morris played Flem on the animated series Cow and Chicken. While he passed away in 2005 at the age of 85, his voice work continued to be used right up until 2013. Pat Frawley has stayed with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles franchise since the 80s. He's also the voice double for Buzz Lightyear and Toy Story-related projects. He can be heard in the Disney parks on rides like Buzz Lightyear's Astro Blasters and Buzz Lightyear's Space Ranger Spin. He's still married to his bride from 1979, and they've had 4 kids in the years since. He currently lives in Los Angeles and teaches the craft of voice acting. Chuck Lorre transitioned from animation to live-action comedies. He was a writer-producer on My Two Dads and then an executive producer on the ABC comedy Roseanne. He was fired from Roseanne over creative differences, but this led to Lorre creating sitcoms. His first attempt was Franny's Turn, which lasted for 5 weeks. But he rebounded with Grace Under Fire, a show built around comedian Brett Butler, which ran for 5 years. He followed that with Sybil and then Dharma and Greg. He started to become known for his vanity cards, a blink and you miss it message he started to sneak in at the end of his shows. Highlights from Lorre's career include 2 and a Half Men and, of course, The Big Bang Theory. He's currently hard at work on Young Sheldon, Bob Hart's Abishola, and The Kominsky Method. The legacy of the Little Clowns of Happy Town is that it's a time capsule of a moment in the 1980s. Some of the best and brightest in the field of acting came together. Old pros like Howard Morris, Frank Welker, and Sue Blue came together with relative newcomers Charlie Adler, Pat Frawley, and of course Danny Cooksey. All these actors came together with the power of Marvel Entertainment behind them. It was a show designed to be a hit, but ended up being a mishmash of good intentions and misguided jokes. The real legacy of the Happy Clowns of Littletown may be Chuck Lorre. It was a chance for him to do something creative, and he did. Then when it went south, he moved on to the next thing. This would happen after he was fired from Roseanne and created the show Franny's Turn. It failed after 5 weeks, but he rebounded with Grace Under Fire. I would believe that Mr. Lorre learns from his mistakes. He likely has the ability to look back at what didn't work and not repeat it. When you collect a lot of what didn't work, you have a better idea of what might work in the future. A friend of mine, Rob Stancomb, once said, "The only crime of failing is that you don't learn from it." In the years since Little Clowns went off the air, it's fallen into obscurity. But Chuck Lorre has risen to be one of the best writer-producers in prime time. His shows have run for long periods of time and have been well-received by the viewing public. A show like Mom seems just as much a risk as Little Clowns. Lorre found a way to tap into the human element of the show so the humor doesn't overshadow the humanity. And Bob Hart's Abishola also seems like a risky show, but it's still on the air. Mike and Molly, a show about overweight people, could have been a bunch of tasteless fat jokes, but it wasn't. So, here's my challenge. Chuck Lorre's had this amazing career and had the ability to balance humor and drama while keeping his characters human and full of life. My challenge is for Mr. Lorre to reboot The Little Clowns of Happy Town. Now, I know that this is never going to happen. I doubt Mr. Lorre will ever be aware of my look at his old show. I wonder if it's a series he'd like to forget. But if there's one person who might have the knack to make the Little Clowns premise work, it just might be Lorre after all these years. All his experience would bring a significantly different approach to this show now. I, for one, would be curious to see if he could make it a hit, or if it's just a manufactured premise that has no redeeming qualities. What do you think? Check us out on Twitter and let us know. Until next time, thanks for tuning in. Thank you for joining us at this Saturday Morning Podcast. If you like what you hear, please subscribe. If you could do us a favor, leave a 5-star review wherever you get your episodes. Check out Twitter at SatMornPod for announcements and other cartoony things. We're also on Instagram at SatMornPod, the official source for all the behind-the-scenes stories of the podcast. Got a minute? Check out the Saturday Morning Minute on YouTube. We offer quick looks at all those great 80s shows. And what about you? Do you have any vintage Saturday morning memories? If so, email your story to satmornpod@hotmail.com. We could read it on the next episode. If you'd like to support us so we can make more of these things, find us at patreon.com/saturdaymorn. You'll find a stockpile of Season 1 bonus content as well as new features added monthly. You'll also have a chance to win behind-the-scenes prizes as well as being given email priority.